Hello, hello. Welcome to Driven by Design, the only automotive show that shows you the future of the car industry one conversation at a time. And I'm very excited today because this is our first day using our new music, which you can hear in the background. It's like a little
group. Think you're over-caffeinated today, Harry.
No, no, it's under achievement today. I haven't done anything today. We've got our wonderful engineer and producer, Paul Roberts.
Yes.
And today is a very special show.
It really is. We rarely do a show like this or have an opportunity to do a show like this.
Yeah, it's a tribute show. We have two guests, too. So there's a lot of firsts today. First music, first intro, first tribute show, and also first two guests. We have one on the phone, who is Brenda Parkin, former designer at Nissan. Brenda was in charge of all of the color and material for Nissans in North America.
Say hi, Brenda.
Hello. Thanks for having me. Thanks
hi, Brenda.
Yeah.
Hi.
I'm so glad you're here. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, you're clear as a bell.
Okay, good, all good, right. Good. And our second guest, who's in person, right here in front of me, is Anka Bodak, also former Nissan designer. And the theme of why we're doing former Nissan designers will be very clear in a minute here. Anka, incidentally enough, worked for Brenda. She was Brenda's employee and was a color and material designer working for Brenda for most of the years.
Was she a good employee, Brenda? Tell us the truth now. Come on now. She doesn't work there anymore.
Yes. Easy to say, the best.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, both of these designers are very generous, talented.
And let's
designers.
Get Brenda to be a little closer to whatever you're talking into, a cell phone or a smartphone, because you're a little soft there.
Okay.
There we go. As close as you can. This is going to be a close-up, intimate conversations with some fun memories of apparently a very amazing man who I never met. Yeah.
That's a great segue. So the reason we're doing this show, as special as it is today, is to talk about Jerry Hirschberg. Jerry Hirschberg was the founder of Nissan Design International in 1979. He created the studio that was responsible for about 75% of the cars in North America during the 80s and 90s. Some really amazing designs.
Not just Nissan, but other cars?
Well, Infiniti. Nissan and Infiniti. Yeah. But also a lot of firsts for Nissan.
Right.
Aside from the, you know, amazing accomplishments of that, running a studio, Jerry was also really, really unique and individual with it. Was a bit of a visionary, I would say. He gave all of us our careers, but he had a very unique way of running a studio. He created the studio from scratch, and so that's what we want to talk about today.
He recently passed away.
Because Jerry passed away last week.
Yeah,
and
he wasn't that old, was he?
He's about 80, Brenda.
Yeah, I was 80.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I personally was affected and have been, you know, quite emotional this week. But also, the industry lost somebody very special.
Someone that they may not even know exists. I mean, that's what's amazing about the work that you guys do. You do it anonymously here. You're not signing your names to the car here. You don't develop. In some cases, some designers have kind of cult followings because people have done something nobody's ever seen before. But for the most part, I don't think the public knows who you guys are.
Yeah, the public never really knows who does the cars that move them. But these people that do this, they create the work that sort of moves you throughout your day. And Jerry was indeed a very special person. He created a studio that was very unique in the car industry. Car studios are typically very very clinical, very business-like places. And, Brenda, I think this would be a great place to kind of tell your impression of Jerry, because Jerry didn't want that. He created something that was like a playground. What is your first memory of Jerry, Brenda? That's probably a great place to kick this off.
Jerry, he could take the most mundane task and turn it into some sort of competitive fun. And everything was a challenge to him. Everything was, you know, some sort of game. He didn't see, like, tasks that we would take, you know, day to day as just sort of no fun. He would just create some sort of strange marble game or rubber band game or something out of something and just created a sense of play and fun.
Yeah.
And it permeated the building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he really did. And that play translated into vehicles that the world had really never seen before. Cars like the original Pathfinder or the Pulsar NX, which was the world's first modular vehicle with a rear end that could be changed out. I think the way that Jerry sort of broke down these barriers, both physical and mental. Like my earliest memory of Jerry is somebody stealing his clothes in the locker room and him deciding just not to wear clothes because he wasn't going to let them get his goat. And so there's your design director, buck naked in the studio. That really sets the theme of what kind of games.
Wow,
get
it.
Now. Yeah, he was very competitive. He was not going to be like one-upped by his underlings.
Now you throw out the mystery. You, I have to pursue this. You say a rubber band game or some other thing. How do you turn designing a door handle into a rubber band game or whatever you said? How do you turn it into a game? How do you, these are parts.
He would make it into a competition. He'd say, oh, how many people like this direction or that direction? Okay, so whatever team won, that's the way we're going to go. I mean, it was just...
But did you do sillier things like this?
Is it, oh, yeah. I remember, like, the
all
first...
All the time.
Talk about, like, the, I remember when, Brendan, we were doing Quest, a minivan that Nissan sells in North America. And when we went to select the models, he had everybody throw their shoes at the one they like, which, of course, damages the model. And I was like, I was a new employee. I thought, this is how it's done? You're going to, okay. And I remember at the end of the review, he was like, oh, no, we'll never do that again. That was just today's thing.
Right.
It's always like that, right?
Or throw people in the water. Remember?
Oh,
whoever won.
Tell the story. I don't know what was it.
Whichever model or design won, they were somewhat questioned and thrown into one of the...
The pools.
Beautiful pools that were like low pools, not deep pools.
Yeah. Drowned. They were drowned. Basically.
So then those guys, whoever that was, like they had no dry clothing.
Yeah.
Hopefully they knew that. So
you knew not to wear white
on
the day of selection because you were going to be transparent. But yeah, you know, see, I think that, and it wasn't just random rhyme or reason, without rhyme or reason. Jerry really believed in this, sort of took like the best of Japanese culture. Buddhism, these ideas from Buddhism about just creating from love, breaking down structural barriers, having creative friction, and he turned those into the playground that we got to be
totally.
In. I mean, Brenda, you had a lot of interaction with the Japanese structure that created this amazing company, Nissan. Can you talk a bit about what Jerry wanted to bring to it, coming from Buick, where he had been working at General Motors in the 70s?
Which has got to be a totally, I mean, I grew up in the car business. I knew people that worked in all levels of the business. Everybody's dad worked for one of these things. And it was a very command and control structure.
Oh, yeah.
There. No, it didn't sound playful or fun at Buick, I'll bet.
You can start with, you know, Jerry chose San Diego.
Yeah.
That wasn't by accident. That was absolutely to be as far as you can from Detroit, literally. And to be close enough to Japan, one thing that it struck me later through the years is he was smart enough to know that he could be on the West Coast and still communicate with the Japanese on a typical business day. You know, but it wasn't like this, it wasn't, how do you say it, Brian? It wasn't that he needed to have that constant communication.
Right.
He had it, but he didn't have to have it.
He sort of sheltered us from, because there is a corporate culture in these large corporations that has to exist by the nature of the fact that they're making a very complicated machine that millions of people will buy. But at the essence of that machine, is a spark of creativity, and he knew how to shelter us from that corporate structure. And this, you know, Nissan was not by any means the first highlight in his career. He worked with John DeLorean. He designed the GTO. He designed multiple Pontiacs before moving over and running Buick. When he got that call from Nissan, or at the time Datsun, to come start a brand new studio, this is exactly what Brenda's talking about. He picked something that not even anybody else was looking at. Like, I think all the car industry at that point was looking at Los Angeles or Orange County as a place to open studios. But Jerry said, nope, San Diego. And
well, he had a young family at the time. And he said,
right.
This is how Jerry thought. He said, Del Mar, pretty, it's nice, good schools, great place to raise a family. We're going to go to San Diego.
Yeah.
And now talk about this, because that was really the beginning of a giant move to car studios here. And I got to tell you, as somebody who grew up in the car business back in those days, people thought that was kind of strange. Why can't we design cars, cool cars here in Detroit? We always have. Why do we have to be off-site and that far away? Is there something in the water? Is there something in the culture? Is there something that sparks more creativity? And then there was sort of an offense like, well, you mean we don't have it back here in Detroit?
I think Jerry would have said yes.
I know. Jerry would have said yes. Jerry loved outdoors.
Yeah.
I mean, he appreciated outdoor sports and... He liked sunshine, and sunshine is fantastic when you're looking at an exterior model, and you can take it out year-round. And I think there's also the huge car culture in terms of the hot rod industry, and
yeah,
he just saw it as something that was doing something different, and that's where he wanted to be.
Let me just give you one other observation here. When he joined Datsun and left GM at that time probably had 50% of the market or more. So that was a big move to go, because I remember my father was an executive for Chrysler Corporation, and some of his underlings left Chrysler when they were struggling in the 70s there and went to start populating some of these companies, some of which rose to high positions, and they were all seen as, oh my God, you're going to go work for them? These are little toy companies.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, Jerry wrote this amazing book that changed my life called The Creative Priority. It's still on Amazon. It's an amazing book, and it's about exactly what you're talking about, creating the creative culture. But when he got the call to start the Nissan studio, he actually hung up on the guy because he thought it was a joke from one of his colleagues in the studio. It's a dream, you know, you have to imagine, here you are running a division of a major car corporation done in a major car corporation way, and here comes this call to start something from scratch, meaning hire the architect, you know, design the building, design the culture that the people are going to work in. And Brenda, I was thinking, you know, because one of your sort of seminal vehicles, Brenda, I think that you worked on is Xterra. I think you were, again, these are the two super talents that we have in the studio here are unsung heroes in the industry of all of the things that they've done. And they're so humble, so I have to kind of drag it out of them. But Brenda really created the color that we know of yellow Xterra. And I was thinking, Brenda, could you tell a little bit of the story about how Xterra came to be a vehicle? Because it did not come from a product planning document. If you talk about like, the research and stuff that was done with the minivans, et cetera.
I wish Robert was on the line too, because he was so much a part of the exterior design of that. But I remember talking that the package, and Brian, you can clarify this more than I, but the package was a little bit funny. I don't know how you would call it. Like the rear was higher, so it had that automatic step in the roof line. Mm-hmm. And it was like, how are we going to deal with this? How are we going to deal with this? And it was like, well, let's think of it in some sort of like functional way. And what could it be? Let's work with it. Let's not, this is what it is. And that's where the basket came out.
In the front
suit or wet. Yeah. It came out of that because here's this useful space that automatically has airflow. What's a good use for it?
Yeah. And I think, and I remember at the time, I mean, I was, you know, Xterra was done before my time, but I remember coming into the studio and that was the story that was told to me, sort of established of how Nissan worked. But this idea that people at the time were not using their SUVs for SUV type things. They were using them as grocery getters. So didn't he send you guys out into the field to study vehicles that were being used with the way they intended SUVs to be used? Do you remember that story?
Yeah. We went out and we looked at a lot of people loading all kinds of different things into different products. Yeah.
Yeah, like minivans with surfboards and like. Yeah.
Surfboards and how were people using this? We noticed people were like hanging their wetsuits off their mirrors.
Hanging wetsuits off their mirrors. I think that's where the wetsuit, because the car had seat covers or wetsuit material.
Right.
But this idea that you don't go, you don't receive the document from product planning and you just do what it's told. You go out and you get involved in the mindset of the person you're designing for.
But was that radically different than what they were doing in Detroit?
Oh, I don't think that you would have gone to the beach and looked at, surfers loading things in Detroit that way. You may have done like clinical studies and things like that, but it was a different kind of culture for sure. He definitely sent us into the field. I remember early on in my career working on Titan pickup truck, and at this time Nissan had never done a full size truck, and so this was a big deal. The truck was so big that the clay plates couldn't contain the model. They had to push it backwards to work on the front and push it forward, because when they built the building they thought, you know, Nissan will never do a truck that big, but we did. And one of the things he had us do was leave the studio and go camping and go be with people that use trucks, rodeos and things like this, and to really understand what they were for.
Is that when you went to the strip bars or something?
That's a good... yes, but for different reasons. The pole dancing, that's a great, actually, segue. That's the kind of thing I learned from Jerry. So years later, when I started my own consultancy, I had a project with Volvo, and they sent me into the field to live with long-haul truck drivers. And one of the places we went were where the prostitutes hung out and the strippers hung out, because they were using these amazing poles. And I loved the pole dancing because the way they would use their thighs to hold onto the poles was a friction idea.
Defy gravity.
Defy gravity. And we came up with a whole shelving system from the pole dancers. And I just, that whole idea of like doing that, that came from Jerry.
Yeah.
I use things in my career today. All of that came from Jerry. I remember, I think Anka, when we were working, I think it was either when Jerry was there or right after he left, we were able to do a whole line of furniture. And maybe you can talk about like how you came up with the idea of using paper, and we almost got fired.
The paper mache.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we were always investigating materials, and I love that Jerry always, he totally encouraged that. We also had, you know, DCL.
Design
Context
Lab.
That we're doing always our own research with them.
Research lab.
Mostly, you know, I love just working with Brenda in the color studio because, and I still remember when I was hired, I walked in the studio. I'm like, oh my God, this is like just a continuous of my studies.
Yeah.
It did not feel like a work environment at all. It was more like, wow, I'm getting paid to study and explore these incredible things.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was another thing.
So what did you do with paper mache? A paper mache doesn't fit in a car. Right. Come on.
Investigating. I mean, we had all kinds of strange things in cars. It was so much fun. We had felt, the next step was like, how can we make a different instrument panel?
Yeah.
So Brian and I, we started researching like, well, maybe we can just cut up paper. And I think we found this, like somebody had a blender in the shop. So we kind of stole that blender. I think we probably ruined that blender.
No, it was their
it was
their protein shake blender. We tried to make
Matt
paper mache.
You put glue and paper in a protein shake blender.
Yeah, we tried to mold our own instrument panels just as a concept, but who knows? Maybe later on that became, you know, we actually did work at the startup car company.
Yeah, we did use paper.
All these like fiberwood panels. So it was amazing just have this sort of sense of freedom.
I think that Jerry, one of the things I remember about Jerry was that he didn't require you to always have a success out of every experiment. He called it freedom to fail. And sometimes an idea fails over and over again, and then 10 years later, something comes out of it. And as long as you were sketching your Altimas and getting your, you know, grills and, you know, door handles and car things done, you could do anything you wanted. Brenda, I think about the relationship that we still have today with Airstream, and that came out of the way Jerry ran the studio. It would be unheard of today for a designer at a car company to reach out to another company and say, we want to do a project with you without any sort of endorsement from, you know, the layers and layers of management. But if you could talk about what we did with Airstream and how that happened.
Well, and maybe back up, because I don't know if we said that Jerry embraced that we didn't just work on cars. Part of his philosophy is that it was very important for designers to not just work on cars, but to work on other products.
Mm-hmm.
So if we found a product that we were interested in doing something with, or he
That's
did,
true.
Or if someone would come to us and he felt it would somehow grow the team, or we would experience something different, we would take it on. So we did everything from kids' furniture to golf clubs to, you know,
yachts.
Boats.
I know. Somebody I met recently still remembered that golf club.
Yeah.
I somehow worked with Callaway, and they're like, oh, I remember. Yeah, Nissan Design did that golf
club. So I got to stop you and say, you're telling me that the Nissan Design Studio allowed you guys to, did you freelance, or did the studio itself take on other projects?
Well, the studio.
Both. We had extra money. No, I know this story. We had extra money, and Japan didn't know about it, and we put that back into things that we wanted to play with.
Like, yeah.
Right?
It would be whatever.
So you guys.
Like a pool table, maybe, or the volleyball court.
So Callaway Golf Clubs, for example, would come to the Nissan studio and say, hey, we want you to see if you can put a spin on this. And didn't he have to go up the ladder to Nissan corporate? And they'd say, no, I don't want you wasting time doing that.
He'd protect us from that.
Yeah, nobody really knew, probably, right?
Nobody knew.
You know, money would come in, and it would be like a little slush fund that you'd use for other things here or something, almost.
Brenda, was it you, or was it Diane?
She didn't even hesitate on that one, yeah.
there was a designer who's just retiring soon, named Diane Allen, really, really talented designer who did the Titan, the Z, just a whole host of vehicles. And I can't remember, Brenda, if it was you or Diane who were doing a line of furniture for children. And maybe you can tell the story of how you came up with the color palette for the...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I remember.
That was, again, Jerry wanted to have us go talk to kids because he thought it was important. So we went to a few schools and talked to kids. And And then, I don't know, I knew I had to do the color palette, and I was like, well, at the time, everyone's saying kids like primary colors. They only like red, blue, yellow, right? It's just like this childlike way of looking at color. And I was like, that's just ridiculous. I don't buy into that. Kids have a super sophisticated taste. And so I was like, how am I going to prove this? Or how am I going to, like, you know, I mean... So we went, and when we were there, I just looked at the kids, and I was like, well, what? I looked at the crayons, like, seriously, like, which
crayons
the shortest?
Which ones they use the most?
Like, which?
Yeah.
And what was it? So small. What were the colors that you found?
They were way nuanced colors.
I remember them. I think, like, a light lime green, like a light purple, I think. Mm-hmm. Almost like muted pastels, right?
So walk me through this again. Yeah. I want to understand. So he says, go out to a school. You just, I want to walk me through. I'm a fly on the wall. You call up some local school and you say, hi. We're a color designer. We want to come out and sit next to these kids and see what crayons they're using here. And they're like, no.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what we did. Like, I mean, how do they know we're not a stalker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, come on in. Just sit and watch the kids.
Well,
there.
Brenda also has a really wonderful way with people that, like, you know, I think you sort of, you're very, you know, humble and charming. It was, you know, in earnest. You know, that was what you wanted. You wanted to know what colors they used. I think you sat with them, right? And you just kind of watched them. Yeah.
With Angela's Furniture Group. Now you're, Angela's Furniture. And we actually won an award for that.
Uh-huh.
I still remember that furniture. It was in the lobby for years.
Yeah, and there was. It was the kind of purples and greens.
So cool.
But that idea that, you know, if you're going to design something for people, you should know the people you're going to design for rather than make assumptions. Like you were saying, Brenda, adults assumed the color palettes that kids want, but kids told you what they want by showing you what colors they use the most.
Yeah.
Brenda,
they didn't be able to say it, but they didn't have the vocabulary. But look,
and how did that improve your work designing a car? You're designing kids' furniture. Mm-hmm. How, when he has to, when Nissan, when the corporate executives in Tokyo or wherever discover this and say, "What are you doing?"
Mm-hmm.
You said, "What? Here's why we do this."
Well, I do think it did influence. Actually, I have every paint panel from that era that I took from the studio. This is recorded, right?
This is a recorded line.
Oh my gosh! Everybody,
everybody gets right now.
Everybody gets something.
There's helicopters flying around trying to find you in those panels right now.
No,
oh God, I know. No.
Care.
No, I think that also it's about a mindset. If you're creative in that way, you'll be creative this way. Let me here's a story of so that was the beauty of this, that like something like going to speak to children broke up your mental calcifications of how colors are developed. You may not say, okay, these are the colors now we're going to use for the rest of America, but that type of thinking is what Jerry wanted. But I'm thinking of a very literal translation story, which I really love. Brenda, why don't you talk about the garbage from the car washes and the vacuum cleaner bags? Dirt. It's a very dirty story.
All right. I forgot even what product it was for. I think it was for something that was going to get... No, it's just regular minivan, I think.
Uh-huh.
I was like, well, okay, the carpets get really, really gross and dirty. Well, but what colors... We kept putting, like, really light beige carpets and everything. I was like, oh, that's dumb. Why put beige when you know it's going to be... So I said, well, let's just get all the dirt from vacuums from around the U.S.
Car washes around the United States.
Car wash dirt.
Hi. Is this Joe's Car Wash in Toledo?
Yes.
We would like to come and collect the dirt at your bags here. Sure.
You did.
Oh, my God.
I had to call my friends all around the U.S., tell them to go to car washes and get it out. And then I sent them a $10 gift certificate.
Wow.
For dirt.
For dirt. But Brenda, didn't you actually find that different parts of the country had different hues to the dirt?
Yeah, they did.
Well, that's
of course, it was a different stuff. So, but in the end, it gave me the value of what was the average dirt color. But I had to sift all this out, by the way. I had to sift it through a sifter, and there was some weird stuff in that. I was like, I'm going to get, like, hepatitis. Yeah,
But you did translate it. Like, and I think I remember you were saying, like, you know, dirt from Arizona had a ruddy color, and dirt from, like, Detroit was more blue or green, or, you know, dirt from Florida was kind of creamy.
Cooler.
Yeah.
So if I had walked into the studio, so I'm with the executive team, and they fly. They want to bring me through the design studio because they're so proud of the work you're doing. And you're over in a corner, going through piles of dirt. These two are making paper mache over here. They would have thought this is like an insane asylum here. This
yeah. It was, you know, I think about, okay, here's another, this is a very Jerry-influenced story. So when we did, when he let us, well, encouraged us to have, do other things, one of the things I did was reach out to Airstream. And through a long story that I don't need to tell it here, but to take the value out of it, is that one of the beautiful things about an Airstream that I learned through, you know, establishing this relationship, is that when you walk into an Airstream, you see yourself in the Airstream because the Airstream changes color. It's aluminum. So if you walk in with a red jacket, an Airstream turns red. How do you translate that into a car?
Well, it does.
Go ahead.
The sleeping bag story.
So this is a great one. Anka, yeah, so we did a road trip with Airstream. They gave us three Airstreams.
Anka's got to tell the story. She's not telling enough stories here. Okay.
Oh, it's fine.
Your turn
yeah,
to tell
so we
story.
Had this amazing... this was another thing that probably wouldn't happen nowadays or not in,
yeah, in a different
any
environment.
Studio, I could imagine. We basically, our studio was getting remodeled, so we needed a place to house all of White Studio, which was the color studio. So we got, we talked to Airstream, and I think we got like three Airstreams.
Yeah.
Three trailers, and they were all empty inside. So literally the entire color design team, plus Brian and who else, we all went like across the country to the Airstream factory. We picked up empty Airstreams that then we got to design when coming back.
Yeah.
So much fun.
But we camped on them on the way home.
And we camped on them.
For 4,000 miles.
Hey,
I know.
Hey, Jerry.
Oh, my God.
Might I add, Javi never towed a thing in
our lives.
Oh, my God. None of us.
We
I
had
know.
three Xterras and three trailers. We never towed anything. And we drive back.
And we all had walkie-talkies and handles.
Yeah.
I still have to figure out what
tell people it. What happened to us in Missouri in that morning you woke up.
So, yeah, Brian and I, we almost didn't even survive because I think the heater was broken. So we're, like, totally in the freezing cold, like, sleeping in these super green, like, sleeping bags.
Yeah.
But in the morning, we woke up. It's like, oh, my God, this is amazing. The whole ceiling had, like, this incredible reflection of the green.
The green. And the trailer had turned green inside from the reflecting the green suitcase, sleeping bag.
So that didn't inspire the headliner?
Mm-hmm. Well, it inspired a couple things. It inspired the concept car that we did that year for the auto show, which was a vehicle that had a trailer on it. But it also, what we did was it was the first time that personal content was coming into a vehicle. So if you remember, like when the iPhone came out, this was the first time you could bring your content into your car, and not
it
like
didn't come already pre-decorated or whatever. I mean, it was stuff you brought in and that you wanted to use in the car.
Exactly. So we translated that a literal analog idea of the car changing color to a vehicle that changed personality when you got into it with your own. At the time, it was like your own music, your video content, stuff that we're doing now in cars, where you get into the vehicle and it knows you. It knows who you are and it changes its personality for you. So that idea really for Nissan, or for, you know, within Nissan as a studio, that came out of that morning of Anka waking up in the green, freezing, uncomfortable, totally frost on the inside of the trailer, and realizing this epiphany, and that begat a whole host of inspiration that inspired.
And so, I think in general too, like to me, it was so amazing because we could totally go out of the studio and do like all kinds of research. I remember we used to go to like junkyards or. Yeah. I mean, all these different places we went, or we took like road trips whenever the Japanese.
So, hey, Jerry, where's your team today? Here, they're in Missouri.
Yeah, exactly.
They're at a trash dumpster somewhere here. They're over to school talking to kids in crayons here.
Yeah.
All the way across the country, but I always felt like, you know, you're really not going to get the idea at your desk, and that
you have to get out.
I really feel like he promoted that down to even. Lunch breaks were longer. They were an hour and a half, and people were like playing volleyball. They're always outside
competing.
Not going to get the idea amazing. At your desk. Well, here's what I'd like to do. Here's the idea I'd like to do, because once again, we've blown past our normal half hour show here, and I feel like you've only even touched the surface. Do you guys want to stick around and do part two here and talk about then, out of this incredible experience, what was born? How did it change the industry? Or has it gone back to what it was?
Do you have time, Brenda?
Yeah.
We can keep going. Yeah,
if you do.
Oh yeah, I love it. We usually do two. When we run out of time.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Totally.
All right.
Because we're just getting on a roll now.
Yeah, this is
just it's usually what happens. The best stuff happens in part
two. So I'm going to leave it there. And final thought is that you can't. It doesn't come to you at your desk.
Yeah.
The idea doesn't come to you. You have to go out and find it. And it sounds like he, more than anybody else you guys knew, encouraged you to get out and find it.
Oh, yeah. We are the designers we are today because of him.
Totally.
The one thing we didn't touch on, and I think is such a part of who Jerry was, and this was, Jerry was a dichotomy, a huge dichotomy. He was into, like, the culture, the arts, music, I mean, very, very highbrow stuff.
And he
would take us to the symphony and take us to places I obviously never had been in my life, you know. So he was part of this. On the other hand, he was, you know, do I dare say, the kind of guy that would say, pull my finger, you know?
Yeah. I know.
That was the thing about Jerry.
Right.
He was both.
Pull my finger.
Yeah, yeah. But
everybody who's ever had a dad knows what that means. Yeah, right.
You know, and you know what was neat about, like, people like Jerry and Tom is that for me as a young designer coming in, let's say in the last, you know, couple years of his career, Jerry had so much talent that I went to work knowing every day I would never quite be as good as Jerry, and you aspired to be that good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really something, like, when you really respect and admire the people you work for that you want to be as good as them, that talent sort of oversees every. He can be a pull my finger kind of guy because so the talent speaks for itself, you know.
Well, we're going to pull the finger on this one here, and we're going to wrap it up, and we'll come back for part two and talk about the legacy. So what did he create? What did he leave behind other than a bunch of happy people like you guys are?
Okay.
All right, stick around. We're going to come back for part two. Right here in Driven by Design, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.